From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me this evening. I hope you're doing all right, especially after such a smoky and hazy day and afternoon. Smoke will continue into the night, and we've got a story on that coming right up. Also, Ulster County eyes possible tax surcharges to offset cuts to social services. The legislature voted to support it last night, and Radio Catskill had a reporter there on the scene. That story is coming right up. And the local cops, local crimes law is set to go into effect next month in New York State, trying to curtail some of the coordination between local law enforcement and immigration and customs enforcement. But as the deadline approaches, some law enforcement officials say they may challenge the law or just refuse to comply with it. Patricio Romayo talks with Maria Silva, Times Union Hudson Valley. Coming up in the second half of the program, she's got the details on this story. Yes, we are going to start tonight with a big reminder about the big story of the day. The air quality alert in New York State is still in effect until midnight tonight. It's been smoky and hazy most of the day, and there's a good chance for similar smoky conditions tomorrow, if not worse. Air quality is monitored by the State Department of Environmental Conservation, and today, due to the impact of the Canadian wildfire smoke, the DEC updated the state's air quality advisory to include the entire state. The DEC urges New Yorkers to reduce their exposure to air pollution, but as Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar reports, many farmers are still working out in the fields.
Brenda Miller owns a 5-acre vegetable farm in Liberty, New York. This week, she's spending a lot of time outdoors, cutting greens, kale, collards. As of Wednesday morning, she's still farming, but in smokier air conditions.
And people said you should be careful that the particles get deep into your lungs without you realizing it, and that you shouldn't stay out and work for long periods. But this is a farm, and it is the growing season. It's kind of impossible not to stay out and work for long days.
Wildfires in Canada are expected to create poor air quality throughout the state, with the worst impacts expected in western and central New York and the Lake Ontario region. Poor air quality is expected to make its way down to the Lower Hudson Valley and New York City. Connor Young, program manager at the Watershed Agricultural Council, says that farmers often feel they don't have a choice whether or not to work outdoors, especially during the summer's peak seasons.
It's essentially a workplace hazard, right? The respiratory, the respiratory impacts that they face as well as livestock can be pretty, serious. The heat index, and those the heat stress components related to animal production and even the farmers themselves, that can be a very real threat as well.
New York's Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Amanda Lefton says that the visible smoke people see is not always indicative of air quality.
That might be happening at higher levels. It's not necessarily making its way to the ground. So again, the most important thing that New Yorkers can do today as we continue to see poor air quality from wildfire smoke is be air quality aware.
AirNow.gov will have up-to-date information about the air quality in your region. In Liberty, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Kimberly. Again, the air quality advisory for tonight goes until midnight. If you are heading outside, please use caution, even at nighttime, and check ahead if you are planning on any outdoor events. For instance, tonight's performance of the Calicoon Center Concert Band has been canceled due to the air quality. The long-running concert series will resume next Wednesday night at its regular time at 8 o'clock. Again, no Calicoon Center Band performance tonight. The weather forecast says area of smoke and haze are possible again tomorrow, and air.gov is saying tomorrow's air quality is expected to be worse than today in our region. Air.gov is a great place to get up-to-date air quality information for your area. That's air.gov. And, of course, if there's any air quality alert tomorrow, we will be letting you know right here on Radio Catskill. I'm going to pause for just one moment to remind you that we still have not met our goal for our summer fun drive. We still need your help, so please give what you can at wjffradio.org and support local news that you would not be hearing otherwise. This is the news of the day. We are surrounded by this wildfire smoke. All of New York State is under this air quality alert, and we here at Radio Catskill, we have a full-time reporter that could go out and see how is it impacting people that have to work out in this. That was reporting. It was just done today. Able to bring it to you in the evening here on the Local Edition because listeners like you support the station. So please keep that support coming. Continue to stand with us by giving what you can and helping us end our summer fund drive. We're getting very close to making our overall goal. It would be great to hear from you. Be great to see your donation. If you have something to give supporting local news like the Local Edition, like Radio Chatskill, like Farm and Country, all of the great local talk programs that we have here on Radio Catskill, local news and information, keeping you informed, keeping you safe, keeping you connected to your neighbors, whether you know them or not, whether you even agree with them or not. It's important to have these community spaces where information can be exchanged and gathered and distributed. You make it happen. Please give what you can now. Go to wjffradio.org to make your donation. That's wjffradio.org. This is the Local Edition, and I'm Jason Dole, and we're moving on to our next story. Now, last night, the Ulster County Legislature voted to support a plan to introduce a tax surcharge to the highest earning households in the county. This new preemptive plan was created to fill gaps in social services created by federal budget cuts without raising property and sales taxes. Radio Catskill reporter Rebecca Hendricks attended a rally of local lawmakers and supporters ahead of the legislative session to find out more about the impact of this potential tax plan.
Who here wants fair taxes?
Last night, the Ulster County Legislature passed a resolution in support of the Ulster County for Fair Taxes Act. Residents filled the legislative chamber, spilling over into the hallway as 47 people waited to speak in favor of the plan. The Ulster County for Fair Taxes Act outlines a plan to add a surcharge to the wealthiest 1% of the county's households to fill local gaps in Medicaid and SNAP without burdening middle to low income residents and small businesses.
As it stands, we fund Medicaid and SNAP through property and sales taxes, which means seniors and working families are paying more than their fair share.
That was Amy Friedman, speaking at a rally hosted by the grassroots organization For the Many ahead of the legislative session. New York State Assemblymember Sarah Hanna Shrestha argues that when the wealthiest New Yorkers benefit from federal tax cuts, they have the money to spare for residents in need of assistance.
So we live in one of the most unequal states, where the difference between those who make the most and those who make the least is very, very and disgustingly wide. In the state of New York, the millionaires are going to be seeing a cumulative saving of $12 billion every year going forward.
This tax surcharge would apply to single filers making more than $250,000 a year and joint filers making more than $500,000. This represents 1% of households in the county. The 18.75% surcharge is applied to the state taxes paid on additional income over the threshold. Now, let's break that down. According to an example from the Office of the County Executive, if you were to make $600,000 filing jointly, your household would pay a bit over $37,000 in state taxes. $30,000 of those dollars are taxes paid on the income under the threshold. The surcharge would only be on the taxes paid above the threshold, which would be the nearly $7,000 remaining, resulting in a surcharge of just under $1,300. In simpler terms, this tax would amount to 0.5% to 2% of a household's income. Lawmakers feel that in the grand scheme, this is small, including Ulster County Legislative Majority Leader Abe Uketel.
This small tax would help us plug the gap handed to us by Washington and would allow us to keep some of the most important services that our community relies on from getting cut.
For residents like Gabrielle Anise, who grew up in the foster care system and is now raising a daughter, cuts to Medicaid and SNAP would be detrimental.
These are not luxuries in my world. These are not luxuries by any means. They are what keep me and my small family together. When I see the public discourse around this bill, when I see people debate whether programs like these are worth funding, I wonder if they understand the gravity of what losing them would mean, not in an abstract, but for someone like me.
It's worth noting that this plan does not take into account household size. For example, a single parent making over $250,000 would pay the surcharge. Jenna Goldstein, for the Many's Ulster County community organizer, said that she believes the surcharge still wouldn't make a big impact on their budget.
But again, I would say that people that are making over $250,000 a single person, I'm not going to worry about paying $500 extra. It's just not how it is.
This tax act is a preemptive plan that wouldn't be enacted until 2028, when the Trump administration plans to make further cuts to federal funding of SNAP and Medicaid. The plan would only be enacted in the case that the county needs to allocate more of their budget to these services.
I feel like the county has really come up with something rare, which never happens in government, which is like a proactive plan.
That was Assemblymember Sarah Hanna Shrestha again. Although this plan is preemptive, she believes it will have to be implemented.
I think they will have to enact it, but it's also like the point is more being prepared for it.
And she's ready to support the act as it rises to the state level.
We know we have a fight ahead next year at the state level to convince the governor to do this. But that's why we want to get this support very early to show that there is really a local appetite for it.
Majority Leader Yucatel believes that this act is about more than equitable tax distribution.
This proposal is not just about the wealthy paying their fair share. It's also about good governance. In fact, I believe that good governance is one of the foundational principles of the new progressive movement that is sweeping this country. It's not just about creating a more equitable government. It's about creating a more effective government, a government that is solving the problems that people have.
You can find out more on this story on our website, wjffradio.org. In Kingston, I'm Rebecca Hendricks for Radio Catskill.
And thank you, Rebecca, for that report. Rebecca Hendricks is one of two reporters who are working with us at Radio Catskill this summer, expanding our news team even as the local population expands at this time of year, even as our calendars expand. News keeps going even in the summer months, and we're lucky to have this additional reporting staff here with us, helping us stay on top of the latest breaking news. Again, this event just happened last night in Kingston, New York. Radio Catskill had a reporter there. So you are supporting local news that just wouldn't be heard right here at this moment if this station wasn't here. Your dollar goes a long way to making sure that people stay informed with accurate information, with reliable local journalism, which is getting harder and harder to find in so many places around the United States, but not here. Not here in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Thanks to the support that you give to this radio station, the support that we give to our own reporters and to our many news partners. We're all in this together, and we're hoping you can do your part now, too. It's our summer fun drive. Help end that fun drive by giving what you can at WJFFradio.org. It's WJFFradio.org. We're past 90% of our goal right now, and this fun drive will be ending soon. And the sooner you give, the sooner it'll end. WJFFradio.org. Thank you so much, everybody that's given so far. Just need to hear from you now. We've got more news on the way. Will New York State law enforcement follow the law that limits their interactions with ICE? Times Union is on the story. Stay with us.
Do you listen to Radio Catskill?
Oh, yeah. I always have. I like it because it's my people. It's my community.
And yes, I do listen to Radio Catskill. It's been my company.
It plays my favorite music.
I like that there is a variety of programming that you can't find anywhere else.
It lets me know what's going on in my community, and it gives me good news. I feel like I'm really connected to my community when I listen to it.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
What Blanche has had to do to get this nomination, to get Trump's support, might be the very thing that undermines his capacity to be confirmed. And even after everything that has happened in the last year and a half, there is the expectation among senators that this department should not be undermined and degraded.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. There's a new law that's taking effect in New York on August 25th, and it will limit cooperation between local law enforcement around the state and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE. The Local Cops, Local Crimes Act prohibits police departments and sheriff's offices from entering into agreements that allow local officers to carry out certain federal immigration enforcement duties. It also restricts county jails from holding people solely for civil immigration violations. But as the deadline for this law approaches, some law enforcement officials say they may challenge the law. They may continue cooperating with ICE informally, or they may refuse to comply altogether. Radio Catskills' Patricio Roballo spoke to Times Union staff writer Maria Silva about the opposition to it and what could happen next.
Maria, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me again. Appreciate it.
So this is a really dense article with a lot of information here. So Maria, help us break this down a little bit. First, let's start off with, you know, can you explain exactly what the Local Cops, Local Crimes Act does?
Yeah, this is a part of an immigration package that passed as part of this year's budget, state budget. And essentially, it has different legislations, different bills within that same package. And one of them, it seeks to limit how New York State and local agencies can cooperate with federal civil immigration enforcement. And the way it's doing this, or it's trying to do this, is by banning local police agencies from entering or renewing 287G, which essentially deputize their police officers as ICE agents to perform certain civil immigration duties.
Right. You know, there's also an agreement called the 287 agreement. Do you want to explain what that is and then how does it allow local law enforcement officers to work with ICE?
Yeah. So 287s have existed for nearly 30 years and they were passed, you know, on the federal level. And they're essentially formal partnerships between ICE and local law enforcement agencies. And what they do is, under those agreements, certain local officers receive federal training and are authorized to perform limited immigration enforcement functions. And this is all happening under ICE's supervision. They train and they make sure that the duties are being carried out the way they stipulate. And this New York law, what it does, it's prohibiting local agencies from entering into those agreements or even renewing those agreements. And it set a deadline for terminating those agreements. And it's coming up. It's August 25th. And what we attempted to do with the story was look at how the different local law enforcement agencies that have those existing agreements, according to ICE, there were 13 by the time that the law passed. 13 local law enforcement agencies in New York State had existing 287G agreements. Some of them have now been terminated, including the Mohawk Village of Mohawk. One second. Yeah, some counties have already begun winding down their agreements ahead of this deadline, including the Mohawk Village Police Department in Herkimer County, even though a lot of them have stated that they disagree with the state law.
So what happens then? What happens when law enforcement agencies, you know, don't want to comply with the law? Do you know?
Well, that's the big question now, because it's fairly, you know, it's a new law, right? And state officials have said that the law is enforceable and legal challenges are already underway. Rensselaer County has stated that they plan to challenge this new law. But at the same time, you know, the Trump administration has already sued New York State, and New York State has filed another lawsuit to try to protect this law. So it's unclear what's going to happen. Hochul is encouraging compliance. You know, she recently announced $75 million in grants for law enforcement agencies in New York State for technology upgrades, as long as those local law enforcement agencies comply with the state law. So it's really unclear. The state attorney general's office have said that, you know, anyone who refuses to comply could end up in court. You know, they would pursue this as a civil matter, not criminal matter. It's yet to be seen what's going to happen and how these different legal challenges develop.
Yeah. So for those who were not on board with this, with the new law, did you give any sort of reasons why, when any reasons are that the sheriffs or local officials are giving for opposing the law?
So opponents have argued that this state law limits cooperation between local law enforcement and federal authorities and will essentially put communities at risk. And some other sheriffs have also said that they'll lose helpful revenue from ICE detention contracts. One of them is Orange County. They have an existing, they don't have a 287G agreement, but they have an agreement that allows ICE to house detainees at the Orange County Jail. And so the Orange County Sheriff's Office has received millions of dollars from this contract, and it's been helpful for them. So they've told me that they're going to comply with the law. And so, but yeah, it's a lot of sheriffs also lamented the loss of that revenue, even though, like I said, Hochul is trying to encourage compliance and has announced some grants. But some of the sheriffs that I talked to did worry about what this loss of revenue and how that would impact their communities and the public safety in their communities.
Yeah, and talking about the Orange County Jail, and it has been housing ICE detainees since I believe you, in your article, it mentions 2008. But from what I understand in your article, the law prohibits agreements that allow county jails to hold people solely for civil immigration violations. So does that mean that the Orange County Jail will no longer hold detainees anymore after August 25th?
So the Orange County Jail has the two wings, right? Mm-hmm. So it has the criminal wing, which houses people convicted of crimes. And it also, another area of that jail houses ICE detainees. Now, some of them might have criminal charges or convictions, but others only have civil immigration violations, and those are different, right? So if they follow the state law, they cannot use the local jail to house those civil immigration detainees. It's really unclear, and I didn't hear back from all of the local law enforcement agencies that I reached out to. I understand a lot of them might be still deciding what to do and how to react, but yeah, it remains to be seen.
Yeah. So you mentioned that the governor is trying to ask for compliance and things like that, but what enforcement tools does the state have if a county or local agencies, refuses to comply?
So the New York State Attorney General, Letitia James, has said that if municipalities refuse to abandon their cooperation agreements after that 90-day wind-down period, the state expects to seek compliance through the courts, and this would be pursued not in a criminal matter, but in a civil matter. But she has stated that she's confident that those municipalities will comply. James has said that her office will make a determination as to whether or not those who do not comply are in violation of the law, and said in short terms that they will take action. They will take action then. The state has already received several complaints that alleged local cooperation beyond 287G agreements, like some police agencies providing translation services or allowing ICE to use their parking lots or facilities and other forms of assistance. And this is particularly happening in Long Island and upstate New York, according to James. But yeah, so the state has indicated that it will make a determination about whether or not those who do not comply are in violation of the law, and that they expect to seek compliance through the courts.
Let's talk about some of the concerns from immigrant rights groups. What concerns are they raising about detention centers and transfers and access to lawyers or family members?
Yeah, so a lot of immigrant rights organizations have celebrated the passing of the state law, and the state law has been largely in response to the actions of ICE in New York State, but also across the country. And but now a lot of them are worried about what's going to happen to those who are in those who are currently detained in local jails for civil immigration. And immigrant rights groups and nonprofits like the Center for Constitutional Rights, they're now tracking who is being held in those jails and how to connect them with legal resources before jails begin clearing out. And they said this is going to happen likely in the fall. But yeah, a lot of the sheriffs have said that part of the reason why they oppose this law is because New York State has some of the most heavily regulated detention facilities or correctional facilities. And they worry that with this law, those who are currently in New York, detained for civil violations in New York State, will be transferred away from their communities to facilities that may not be as heavily regulated or might have worse conditions. Sama Sase, who's a staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, said in response to that argument that local jails in New York State that are housing civil immigration detainees are already experiencing poor conditions. And she talked about the Orange County Jail, which in the past has been the subject of several allegations. And Sama Sase, my source at the Center for Constitutional Rights, she is actually part of a lawsuit, a First Amendment or civil rights lawsuit against the Orange County Jail, alleging that detainees there faced retaliation and that their First Amendment rights were violated. So immigrant rights groups are already raising the alarm about local county jails in New York State and their conditions. And right now they're trying to just essentially track who is being held there and what's going to happen.
So, Maria, as the August 25th deadline approaches, there's a possibility of legal action means this dispute could continue well beyond the law's effective date. We were talking to Times Union staff writer Maria Silva about New York's new restrictions on cooperation between local law enforcement agencies and ICE. Maria will continue following this developing story, and we'll welcome her back as new updates emerge. Maria, thank you so much for joining us. In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you so much, Patricio, for that report. Big thanks to Maria Silva as well, doing great reporting at Times Union. Thank you, listener, for being here with me. I'm Jason Dole, and that is it for the local edition tonight. But that's not it for our summer fun drive. We are close to making our goal and ending this fun drive and going back to regular programming. Your donation could help make that happen now, please. As we get ready to go on to the daily, we're still waiting to hear from you. Go to wjffradio.org. Make your donation now at wjffradio.org. Don't forget, this air advisory, air quality alert is in effect until midnight tonight, so do be careful, and there are chances that the air will be as bad, if not worse, tomorrow. We'll be keeping you up to date here on Radio Catskill. Stay with us now. We've got more news on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Never Sink General Store, featuring catering for parties, meetings, and weddings, gourmet deli, pizzeria, and groceries inside a gas station. NeverSinkGeneralStore.com. From Rourke Law Liberty, New York, a general law practice serving the Catskills and Delaware River Valley with an emphasis on estate planning, estate administration, elder law, and real property matters. RourkeLaw.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
Millions of people depend on the NPR network. We depend on you. Your support is central to our journalistic integrity. Donate to this station today, and thank you.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
This week on Cat's Cast, old family photo albums hold secrets you may have never noticed. Maureen Taylor, the photo detective, shows us how a single image can rewrite a family's story.
When you take apart those old photo albums, keep in mind that someone put them together, spent a lot of time doing that, and put all those pictures in a particular order.
Saturday at 11 a.m.,
right here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill.